conundrum. Somebody's sincere, but they're not following. And so Prabhupada said, well, probably means that, you know, the mode of ignorance is having an effect on him. And so devotees were saying, well, he's giving in to weakness. And so Prabhupada immediately shot back and he said, why are you giving in to weakness? So I found that so telling and also just right cutting through really to the core of the problem. Because what the devotees were saying is, okay, this devotee is weak, and because he's weak, he's not able to follow. And therefore, the weakness is a rationale. It seems a logical rationale for not being able to follow. And Prabhupada is saying, why are you giving into the weakness? Meaning, okay, weakness is there, but you don't have to give into it. So if we apply that to the mind, and here the mind is sometimes out of control, or it appears to be out of control, or we feel forced, like Arjuna says, forced to act helplessly. By what force? And Krishna's saying, well, it's lust. But Prabhupada's saying, okay, it can be lust, it could be the mode of ignorance, but Prabhupada's saying, but why are you giving into it? So I always like to think of the mind like the steering wheel, and we as the driver controlling the steering wheel. So if the wheel is going left and we need to go right, what do? We turn the wheel right. That's how we drive cars. We don't get it. Well, why'd you get an accident? Well, the car went left. Well, did you straighten it out? No. Why not? Well, I was just going left. I didn't know I could do anything. So if you said that, then people would think, you're like, what's wrong with you? You know, you can't drive a car like that. But that's exactly, the body's the car, and so we're driving the car this way or that way. And so sometimes the mind wants to veer off to the left. And it's reassuring to know and reassuring to remind ourselves that we can turn it to the right, even though sometimes we think we can't. We think, well, we have to go to the left because that's the way it's going. So we talked a lot about that last week, and I just wanted to emphasize that. And this point of Prabhupada saying, why are you giving into weakness? Why are you giving into the turning to the left? Who's in control, the steering wheel or you? Does the car drive by itself? So sometimes our lives are like that. They're just going on under the influence of the modes of nature. And then we get to this point and we think, and we tell ourselves, well, I can't control myself. Which is true if you tell yourself that. If that's what's going on in your mind is saying, Prabhu, gee, you cannot control yourself. Then you believe it. But that's not what you're supposed to tell yourself. You're supposed to tell yourself, why am I giving in to this weakness? Just like Krishna told Arjuna. He said, yeah, the mind is difficult to control, but it's possible. Krishna never said, it's not possible. So he did recognize it's difficult. And so many times Prabhupada recognized that Krishna consciousness is not always going to be easy. I mean, sometimes it is, but not always. He recognized that. But I believe, we saw that he expected that if somebody was serious about Krishna consciousness, that Krishna would guide that person. So, you know, that excuse that, well, that's just the way it is, or that's just the way my mind is going. You wouldn't want to go to Prabhupada after you committed some grave sin and he asked you why and you just said, I couldn't help myself. That's, you know, what do you think he would say to you? You couldn't help yourself? You wouldn't even say that to Prabhupada if you were in your right mind, because you know in your heart that's not true. Of course you could help yourself. It seems like we can't, but if we know we can, and if we remind ourselves we can, and we condition ourselves to understand and believe we can, it starts to become easier. And then we start gravitating more towards the positive side, where things are more Krishna conscious, where things are brighter. We don't want to live in this dark side, where we're always fighting against the forces of evil that are entering our mind. So it's possible turn the steering wheel away. We can do that, and when it's going the wrong direction, like I like to use this word manage. Well, manage your thoughts, manage how your mind works. Reprogram it, recondition it. I think we spoke about that last week. The mind is conditioned, so we can recondition it. That's the whole process of Krishna consciousness. A lot of times Prabhupada will tell us how a pure devotee thinks. So why is he telling us how a pure devotee thinks? Because he wants us to at least practice thinking that way. He wants us to understand that's how we should be thinking, even if it is somewhat artificial, even if it is somewhat forced. At least we're learning, this is how a pure devotee thinks, just like sometimes you may be upset. And then you might remind yourself, well, how does a pure devotee act, or how would he or she react in this situation? And that enables you to control yourself, because you think this is not the proper way to act, even though you feel impelled to act that way, because you know this is how an advanced devotee should act. This is how an advanced devotee should think. So it's a kind of reprogramming. We're reprogramming ourselves to think in Krishna conscious ways. But foundationally, if there's any thought that I can't do that because I'm weak, then we're defeated before we start. And that's why in Prabhupada's statement, he says, why are you giving into weakness? He's just clarifying that we don't have to give into weakness. It's not that because the modes are acting on us, it's not that because we're conditioned in a certain way, we have to surrender to that. But we can manage it. We can reframe how we think about a situation, how we deal with a situation. I find in my own life that sometimes I find my mind is like a computer, and it's like I'm a computer programmer, and I'm constantly reprogramming it when it's not acting the way I would like it to. I don't know about computer programming, but I know a little bit about it. And so you program it, and then you find there's some glitch somewhere because you missed something in the program. So then you have to go back and reprogram it. You know, when new software comes out, sometimes you click something and it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. What do they call that? There's a name for that. What do they call that, Uddhava? You know, when there's a defect in this, you know, there's a new software and there's a defect in it. A bug. In our mind we have so many bugs, right? So we're in the world, we're interacting with the world, and we see bugs coming in. What are the bugs? They're the wrong thoughts, or the wrong viewpoints, or the wrong beliefs, the wrong attitudes. Attitudes which are not helping us, beliefs which are not helping us become Krishna conscious. Thoughts which are not helping us, but actually they may be thoughts which are hindering us or bringing us to the material platform. So we can look at those as bugs. And so we see them and say, okay, how am I supposed to think? What's the attitude? What's the belief? And let me rewrite the software of my mind. Let me rewrite the Krishna conscious programming. And so the belief or the understanding that I can react in a Krishna conscious way, even if the mind, or even if there are negative desires, or the mind is in a negative mind frame, mindset, or the wrong thoughts are there, is fundamental to reprogramming, to getting rid of the bugs. And then so the more we reprogram, what I find in my own life, the more I reprogram, what happens is that when I come into situations which potentially can drag me down, because I reprogram myself, the programming tends to kick in, so that the thoughts can't, how should I say it, the thoughts can't manifest significantly, or let's say if we think of the thought like a cavity in the tooth, it can't enter very deep, because the reprogramming just doesn't allow it to go in, because the reprogramming of how I should think kicks in. So that's what Krishna consciousness is all about. It's the ability to choose thoughts in any given situation or time which are conducive to Krishna consciousness, and rid ourselves of thoughts which are not. And I know sometimes in some situations we just think that's not possible, or we don't even think, we're just acting. But at any moment we need to catch ourselves and say, okay, I see what's going on here. Stop, take a step back, let's look at it. What's the Krishna conscious way to deal with this situation? What's the proper way to think, the proper way to see, the proper way to deal with this person or situation. And then what that does, if we go back to the original discussion where Prabhupada's saying, well, the real way to conquer the mind, to conquer the senses, to be able to follow the practices of Krishna consciousness is to be engaged and get the positive taste. Well, if we're in this position where we can continually reprogram our mind with the proper thoughts, that puts us on the Krishna conscious side, which enables us to be more engaged or more positively engaged or more properly engaged in Krishna service. And what I also find is that the more that I focus on this reprogramming, the more I see it, actually my mind becomes conditioned to a Krishna conscious way of thinking. So then it starts to become easier. I mean, ultimately, we're meant to hit this point in Krishna consciousness where it's not really a struggle anymore because there's so much ruchi or taste that we don't want anything else. But until we're on that level, this reprogramming, reconditioning is essential. But the more you practice it, the more it becomes your new programming, which is really nice, that you begin to more naturally respond to situations in a Krishna conscious way, which is really the only way we'll be happy. You know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said something which I've always found to be so telling for our Krishna consciousness. He said that when you become a devotee, the only thing at that point that can make you happy is the following of the devotional practices. He said, at that point, when you become a devotee, material things don't have the power to make you happy. Maybe they can give you comfort, but they don't really have the power to make you happy any longer. For a materialist, being illusioned, material things can make them happy. I'm so happy I have these things. But he said, for a devotee, of course, it might bring some little happiness or some pleasure. But he said, ultimately, a devotee, happiness comes from following the principles of Krishna consciousness. And their unhappiness, devotee's unhappiness, comes from not following. So even if you don't have what so-called would make you materially happy and you're following Krishna consciousness, as you know, you'll be happy. And if you have the things you want and you're not following, as you know, you won't be. So when we're in this aligned position where the mind is supporting our Krishna consciousness, where the mind and thoughts are in alignment with our desire to advance in Krishna consciousness, then we're happy. It's when we're out of alignment, it creates this type of pain which is which can only be resolved or only be relieved by proper Krishna conscious action and Krishna conscious thinking. If I'm a devotee and I'm not thinking in Krishna conscious terms, if I'm thinking about something that is basically how not the average non-devotee would think, if I'm thinking that way, like them, how does a non-devotee think? Getting back at people who've hurt us, revenge, blasphemy, extreme fault-finding, desire to take advantage of others, to enjoy others, and it can get worse, stealing and so forth. So if we're thinking that way, even for a moment, that thought for a devotee is terribly painful because the devotee is not supposed to think that way. And the irony is that we're thinking that way because we think those thoughts will give us pleasure or we think those activities will give us pleasure. And sometimes even mentally, some thoughts, lustful thoughts, will give us pleasure. But even if they give us pleasure, at the same time they cause us pain because it's not the way a devotee is supposed to think. So this irony is created when we become a devotee because it's very clear how we're supposed to think. I mean, Krishna makes that clear. Prabhupada has made that clear. We know what thoughts are pure. And so if we're not thinking purely, it's not an integrated thought, and therefore it causes us all kinds of misery, and it can cause all kinds of guilt, remorse, shame, that I'm a devotee, I'm dedicated to acting and thinking in a certain way, and I don't think about it. And sometimes, as I said, in the name of trying to enjoy, or the name of being happy, we're thinking in ways which are not Krishna conscious. And on some level, because we as devotees are being conditioned to understand Krishna consciousness very deeply, so on some level within inside of us, There's an incongruency, and that incongruency causes us to be not really properly situated, not really happy. We know what we should be doing, and we don't do it. It causes what's called a cognitive dissonance. You know what you should be doing, but you're doing something else. You know you can be doing better, but you're allowing the thoughts of your mind to drag you down. You're not controlling them. It's misery. It's misery. I mean, I don't know if there's any greater misery in this world than knowing what we should do and not doing it. And that's why, and that's the epitome of what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying. So whenever our thoughts are taking us away from Krishna, then inevitably, on some level, there's some pain going on. And whenever we're thinking of Krishna, just like you see, if you're sitting in a class, someone's talking about Krishna, especially someone's speaking very sweetly about Krishna Leela, and you're absorbed in hearing that, then how do you feel? Everybody feels blissful. Everyone feels perhaps even ecstatic. Just the whole room is bursting with bliss, hearing about Krishna. Because that's our natural position. When the mind is absorbed properly, that's how we feel. So when the mind is not thinking that way, how do we feel? We don't feel blissful. We feel like a splinter or a piece of glass or a thorn. It's like something that is not supposed to be there, but it's there. And we're trying to process it. So that's why it's so important to control the mind. And it's so important to understand that we all have the power to control our thoughts. Krishna has given us that power. Don't ever think for a moment that you can't control your mind. And if you have that belief, then it's extremely important that you work on changing that, that you can control your mind. In any situation, you can. You can walk away from temptation. You have the power in any situation. You can walk away from tempting thoughts. And even more importantly, you can live your life in a way in which you don't allow yourself to ever be in situations which would disturb your mind to such a degree that you feel that you can't control it. Because that's a whole other angle of this discussion. That one who wants to be Krishna conscious, one who wants to control their mind, will know their limits and will not allow themselves to be in situations in which they know that it would be easy to slip, to be in a compromised situation. Okay, I'm saying at all times in situations we can control our mind, but at the same time, obviously there are situations which are extremely difficult, and these are situations which a devotee would not want to put himself into, would have the intelligence, I have enough intelligence to know that I should not be in this situation. It's not good for my Krishna consciousness. And living in the material world, there are situations that we confront, and sometimes we have choices that we don't always properly utilize correctly. And then we end up in a situation where it may be extremely difficult to control ourselves. So we don't want to do that. We don't want to take this idea and just say, well, I can do anything and control myself. That we want to think that way, that we know ultimately we do have choice, but at the same time we have to have common sense, and that's a practice of Krishna consciousness. Just like Prabhupada said, we should not intimately associate with non-devotees because their habits and their nature will rub off on us. So knowing that, we a good devotee, will be careful about associating with people who could disturb their Krishna consciousness. So the idea is, don't make it more difficult on yourself than you have to. Create a proper environment for that will enable you to control yourself and control your thoughts. At the same time, realize that you are the one who controls your thoughts, even though they appear to pop in. Okay, that's true. Thoughts pop in your mind, right? You say, what do you mean I control my thoughts? They're just coming. I see a beautiful car and all of a sudden I want that car. I have no money. And so that's a nonsense thought. You know, there's so many things we want that we have no money to afford, or there's so many things we want that would not be good for us, that there's some things we want that would actually disturb our spiritual life or disturb our material life. But the mind, it sometimes is on automatic pilot. So it says, hey, you know, you like this, go for this. Okay, that's there. But still we have the power to refocus. No, no, that's not what I want. That's not going to be good. That's not going to help me. So I'm not saying those negative thoughts won't come in, but always understand the power that you have to control it. Because if you don't acknowledge that, if you don't believe that, then you're gonna be like that devotee to whom Prabhupada said why he's giving in to weakness, or about whom he said, why is he giving in to weakness? Why, or Prabhupada said, why? He spoke to everyone. Why you are giving in to weakness? So, it's a nice mantra. Why are you giving in to weakness? Don't have to. You don't have to. I'm here to tell you. You don't have, but Prabhu, but. You know the saying, get off your butts? Butt's an excuse. You know, when you make your butts, think, stop and think, okay, what would Prabhupada say if I said that to him? And then you'll probably want to rephrase. Say, Prabhu, you're telling me this, that, and the next thing happened because of this situation, that situation. Just think, if you had to tell that to Srila Prabhupada, is that what you'd want to tell him? Or would you want to tell him, this happened because I made a mistake. I did something wrong. I maintained an attachment I should have broken. I maintained the wrong thoughts. You know what Krishna says about thoughts. What happens? Dayato, Vishayam, Punsam. That's where it all starts. Meditation. We're all meditating. And conditioned souls meditate on what? Bishaya, Sanskrit, the objects of sense gratification. So from meditating on the objects of sense gratification, why do we meditate on the objects of sense gratification? Because we're thinking how we can enjoy those things. That's how bad we are. If we're not thinking about enjoying our senses, we wouldn't be meditating on the objects of sense gratification, right? Anytime you're meditating on the objects of sense gratification, that means you're meditating on the senses and how those senses can enjoy themselves. So it's already a dangerous position to be meditating on that. And then what happens? Attachment comes by meditation. So that's why it's so important in the beginning, catch yourself on the dayato platform, the meditation platform, nip it there. When it goes to attachment, becomes that much more difficult. And then what happens after attachment? Dayato visham punsam sangasteshu pajayate. Sanjayate kama. And kama means lust. Then it goes from attachment to lust. The lust stage is the stage where you're telling yourself, I have to have this. And at that stage, everything is geared into the attack. I'm going to do this. Stage of attachment is, you know, I want it, it's nice, you know, I'm like, I like to have it. But lust is the, you know, you pull your wallet out and you're buying it, or whatever it is you're doing. So, and it all started with a little simple meditation on sense gratification. It started with a little thought. And it probably started with another thought behind that thought that said, I cannot control this thought. This is all happening so fast. But really, when we think about it, you know, the worst thing of this whole thing is that we're thinking about me and my senses and I want to enjoy. And if that wasn't there in the first place, we wouldn't be meditating on the objects of sense gratification, would we? So that's where the reprogramming comes in. It's, I'm a devotee. No, these senses belong to Krishna, Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam. They're his senses. They're meant to be used in his service. And that's why Prabhupada is saying we can't control ourselves unless these senses are always engaged in his service. Krishna's the enjoyer, I'm not the enjoyer. Use my senses in it. It's so, you know, when anytime you catch yourself meditating on sense gratification, just stop and say, I'm thinking about enjoying this body. That's the problem. If I stop thinking about my enjoyment, thinking about Krishna's enjoyment, I'll stop thinking about these objects of sense gratification. Just like that. But if I'm thinking, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the centered, enjoy my senses, and then we're trying from that platform to fight the mind, it's going to be a much more difficult battle because the foundation of your thought is enjoying your senses. And now you're trying to develop pure thoughts, but you're still thinking about enjoying your senses. You know, there's a lot going on inside of us that has to be in sync with what we want to be going on outside of us. And so if we're trying to achieve a certain state of consciousness at the same time maintaining somewhere down there another state of consciousness, that other state is going to bring us down. And that's why sometimes devotees will say, well, I find it so difficult. Because you may have a fundamental belief or a fundamental desire that it is always nullifying the Krishna conscious desires. So we have to work on that level. I am the enjoyer and the level of I can control my mind. I'm in control, I can do that. So these are, if I change my consciousness, Krishna is the enjoyer, I'm not the enjoyer. I'm a devotee of Krishna. I'm meant to love him, I'm meant to be pure, and that I can serve him and I can take charge of my mind and desires and employ my mind and desires in Krishna's service. That creates a foundation that makes it so much easier to control the mind. So, I've talked enough. I want to see what you guys are saying. So, where do we start? Can you explain our effort? So, Bhakti and Carol says, can you explain our effort? The Lord allowing us to progress. Well, that's an interesting topic because there's a sense that Krishna does everything and we do nothing. And especially when we're talking about purification, it's not like we're purifying ourselves per se, but we're engaging in a process which is purifying ourselves. But the process is hearing and chanting. So it's the holy name that's purifying us. It's the hearing of Shastra, the hearing of discussions about Krishna that's purifying us. So in that sense, it's all Krishna purifying ourselves, but we're just being a willing partner in the process. So it can't happen without our willingness for it to happen. It can't happen without our effort, but it's not our effort in the sense that, as I was saying before, it's not like you can just decide, well, I'm going to become purified. You can decide to control your mind, you can decide to control your senses, but at the same time, you need the power of bhakti to really make that successful, and that's why so often Prabhupada says that impersonalists can't perfectly control themselves because they're not connected to Krishna. So your effort does play an important part. And Krishna's reciprocation with your effort plays a more important part. Because our effort alone is not final, because we're not the supreme controller. But if we sit around and do nothing, then how will Krishna work through us? Krishna wants to choose a viable instrument to work through. So the more we understand this and the more we allow Krishna to work through us and the more we pray to Krishna to work through us, the more we pray to Krishna to change our mentality or help us purify our thoughts, the more we're willing, the more Krishna will work through us. Yeyata, yeyata mam prapanjante, prapanjante. Ye yata mam prapadyante tamstadaya bhajamyaham. I am reciprocating. So that's really how it works. Wherever our heart is, wherever our desire is, Krishna sees that. And so to the degree we want Krishna, to the degree we want to purify ourselves, to the degree we want to advance, Krishna will inspire us within to move forward. I find that in my own life, it's really that's what it's all about. It's all about me and what I want. And then Krishna comes in. I ultimately can only desire, being a willing partner to desire, but to achieve that depends on Krishna. and the mercy of the sadhus. So there's a balance there. But I think, for myself, I always think, my desire, that's fundamental. What do I want? How Krishna conscious do I want to be? If I don't want to be, if on a scale of 1 to 10, if I want to be 3 points Krishna conscious, you think Krishna's going to come along and bring me up to 10 points? No, he'll bring me up to 3, because that's all I want. Or maybe he'll try to push me to 4 or 5 and see if I rebel. But it's not going to push me up to 10 if I don't want to go there. But if I decide that's where I want to go, then Krishna will start to empower me in understanding how to do that and giving me the energy to do that. That's just the way it works. So we really want to monitor where our heart is, where our desire is. And as I've spoken before, we want to monitor our fears about becoming more Krishna conscious, because if the fears are there, then we're going to keep our desire down in the twos or threes, because we're afraid if we go to the sevens or eight, we won't be able to handle it. So then Krishna will reciprocate. You know, you see that in every one of our lives, Krishna is not forcing any of us. As Krishna says in the 63rd verse of the 18th chapter, I've explained this, now do what you want to do. Tatejasi tatakuru. You do what you want. So Krishna wants us to go the full 9 yards, but he's not going to force us. And you see, you know, some people have been coming to temples for years and they're not ready to really involve themselves in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna's not forcing them. And some people come in a few days, they want to get fully involved. And Krishna reciprocates with them and they advance very quickly. It's amazing how much advancement you can make in such a short time if you allow Krishna to work through you. If you allow the mercy of Guru to work through you, you can do wonderful things. So it's really being the instrument. And you know, it's like getting out of the way and allowing Krishna to steer your life. So the more you do that, the more Krishna will do that. And I think it's really powerful to always be praying for that and willing to allow Krishna to do that and be working on that more and more in your life. So any other questions on this? Before we go on, I'll allow you. We have 11 minutes. I brought a few things to read, but if you have some discussion or question, let's go through that now. I mean, what I'm talking about here, what I talked about last week, is if you understand it and apply it, you will see noticeable differences in your life. Not only in your spiritual life, you can apply these principles to material achievement, to gaining greater control of your ability to focus on the work you have to do and the confidence you have in your own ability in Krishna helping you, and the ability to focus on goals. Because a lot of times we look at our life and we might say, well, I'm not where I want to be, but I don't know how to get to where I want to be. But when you understand the power of the mind, then you start to realize that you are where you are because of where you are. Not because of what's happening, it's just because that's who you are, that's where you are, that's what you are. And if you want to get to somewhere else, you have to change something about yourself. So it may be that you have some fear about achieving something, or you can't focus on it, you can't discipline yourself. But if you recognize these things, then you can work on them, and you'll see how much progress you can make when you gain more control of your mind, of your senses, of your time, of your focus, of your intentions. And of course, a lot of that's connected with fear that we can't do it. But how do you know you can't do it if you don't try? So I guess no one has anything to say except Radhe Radhe from Ya Devi. She's blissing out because tomorrow we get the mercy of Radharani, which is a wonderful day to pray for service. Pray to be engaged in service because she engages you. And Radharani is the personification of the internal potency, which Prabhupada's talking about how that's where we need to be if we want to overcome our lower nature. Okay, so I guess you get to hear me read something. Let's see if we have something good. I think I wrote this. I'm going to read something I wrote. Amazing. Maybe it's not amazing. It just is what it is. Okay. Changing our thoughts about something can totally change our reaction to the situation. Think of something bad that's upsetting you and then try finding something good about it. Once you find the good, that thought can dramatically change your response to the situation. So it's a perfect example of what we're talking about. Something's upsetting you, and obviously the upsetting thought is upsetting. It's not helping. You don't want it. And so you begin to look at the situation, say, is there another way to look at this? And then you might find something in the situation that you could learn from, or something that was good about it. Or maybe you feel, well, actually, I deserve this because I mistreated this person, and now I'm realizing I mistreated this person, and now I'm realizing I treat other people that way, and this is going to help me change, so that's good. So now you're looking at it in a different way. You've changed your thought about it. And the thoughts, obviously, they affect us. Oftentimes, thoughts become habits. It's just thoughts are the driving force of our actions. I've got some poetry for you. You like poetry? I found a few nice things tonight that I thought would be nice to read and perhaps discuss. And this talks a little bit about, I think this poem is a little bit about how the mind is like a rudder on a ship. He doesn't say that, but that's the impression I get. So let's read this. This is by a person named Wilcox. I don't know who Wilcox is. Does anyone know who Wilcox is? Doesn't give his first name. One ship drives east, another drives west, with the self-same winds that blow. 'Tis the set of the sails and not the gales which tell us the way to go. Like the waves of the sea are the ways of fate, as we voyage along through life. 'Tis the set of the soul which decides the goal, and not the calm or the strife. So I like that example where he's saying it's the same wind, but it blows one boat east and it blows one boat west. So he's saying it's not the external situation, but it's how you catch the wind. And it's our decision. Is our decision in those situations. So it just goes to show the power of the mind, how one single thought changes direction one way or the other. I have this experience. I don't know if you are aware of the history of our movement. After Srila Prabhupada left, at some points in our movement there were turbulent times. And during Srila Prabhupada's presence, the movement was a particular way. And after he left, obviously, things had changed. And a lot of devotees just had a hard time making that transition, just like, you know, a father dies and the family has a hard time without him. Things are different. And so in making that transition, there was a tendency for a lot of devotees to focus on what was wrong in the movement and endlessly discuss it. And one of the things that I noticed in these endless discussions is that they tended to create a lot of inertia. And so people weren't doing things that they used to do, or they weren't even, or they may have been doing the services they used to do, but perhaps not as enthusiastically. Or perhaps they had even stopped their services. And many devotees realized at a certain point that this is really counterproductive, and that we're allowing the negative situations within our movement to affect us in a way, and we're not taking positive actions to make things better, which we really should be doing. That's the ultimate solution. So I remember a decision I made at a certain point in realization of this, that this is not helping. me, I don't see it helping anybody. There are issues, yes. We may not be able to deal with all of them from our position. We're not in positions of authority where we can deal with them. We can make our opinions known, and then we can move on and make some positive contribution in some way, someplace where we can have influence. And that was a big change, but a big improvement in my life during that period. And I just made a decision, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is where I'm going, and let me make my positive contribution. And a lot of people didn't do that. And they just kind of stood on the sidelines and just watched things go down, and they went down with them. Or I would say they went down first, because a lot of times when there's a problem, if you focus on the problem has a greater ill effect on you than it's having on the situation that you're criticizing. It's interesting. There was this, I think I've quoted him before, Booker T. Washington. He said, I'm not going to allow myself to hate any man, or I won't allow any man I won't allow any man to pull me down to such a platform where I hate him. So it's bad that a man may hate him, but it's worse that he hates the man, and he becomes worse off than the man. So it was a similar situation where I saw people who were criticizing the situation were becoming worse off themselves than even the situation was for others. And so, you know, one simple decision can make a huge difference in your life. It's just one thought. That's it. One little thought. Just one decision. I'm going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get up earlier. I'm going to chant. Just little decisions. I'm not going to allow my mind to think like this. I'm not going to allow myself to be overly critical. I'm not going to condemn. I'm not going to overly judge people or negatively judge them. You know, just little decisions, it's like the steering wheel just turns in a different direction, and it can affect your whole life. It's amazing. I think at that time, a lot of devotees had that realization that we were actually digging our own graves by continually just analyzing, overanalyzing, condemning, criticizing, judging a situation, which perhaps if we were in charge of, we wouldn't have been able to do it any better, or we would have been doing the same thing. So, just a good example of putting up different sails and blowing in a different direction. Okay, I'm going to read two more tonight for you. We have 1 minute, and we're going to read two more. How is that possible? Patrick says, "Nice to see you. I would like to say the same, but I can't see you. I can only see your name. Someday, hopefully, we'll have the technology where you'll all be up there and we can all see you. That'd be nice. Now you can see my red eyes. I have allergy. If you think, if you're wondering why my eyes are red, I'm not intoxicated, don't worry. I'm smoking pollen in the air. Yeah, that's why they're red. I love this one. This is by Miller. I don't know who Miller is. If you don't like where you are, change what you are. If you don't like where you are, change what you are. So we can't change. Like a lot of times we look at our situation and then we're like, oh man, this is so bad. This, that, and the next thing. But really, we create our own situations. So by who we are. So if we change who we are, the external situation is going to change. It's like Prabhupada says, you water the root. You can't get fruits if you don't water the root. So if you change who you are, you change what you are, then, excuse me, if you don't like what you are, change what you are. If you don't like where you are, change what you are. If you don't like where your life's going, change your thoughts. It'll go a different direction. Change who you are. Change your attitudes. It's nice, isn't it? Yeah, my poor eyes, yeah. And I don't like taking allopathic drugs, so I just suffer. Okay, we have one more for you. One more for my poor eyes to read before we go. This is by Edwards. I hold it true that thoughts are things. Now, this is nice. I love this. Now, think of thoughts. You know, like we think of thoughts, we kind of don't see them in the reality of the power that they have. You know, we see, because they're subtle, we don't think of them as things. So I like this. I hold it true that thoughts are things endowed with being, breath, and wings. Isn't that nice? Endowed with being, breath, and wings. and that we send them forth to fill the world with good results or ill. So I'll read that again. I hold it true that thoughts are things endowed with being, breath, and wings, and that we send them forth to fill the world with good results or ill. The power of thought. Thought is a thing. It has energy. You know, thoughts even affect other people. Your thoughts affect other people. Pure devotee. You know, when you're in the presence of a pure devotee, they're thinking of Krishna. That affects you. Thoughts have power. They're things. They're energy. Look at how disturbing thoughts can be, how they can disturb your whole life. They can disturb your physical health. They can hold you down. They can send you up. They can energize you. They can weaken you. They can depress you. They can make you happy. They can make you confident. They can make you lose confidence. It's just, it's so powerful. So if we look at thoughts in that way and the power they have, then we'll be more careful, I think. So, thank you for coming. And if you go to what page, where are we going here? You go to the home page. Oh, yeah. You go to the home page, Krishna.com. And then you go down to the qualities of Srimati Radharani. Is that it? Mm-hmm. And you click on that. You're going to get a free song about the qualities of Radharani sung by yours truly. And it's all free for you as your present for Radhastami. So go grab it now. You go to, and on the homepage, go down and you'll see the qualities of Radharani, Srimati Radharani. It's on the left, 1, 2, 3, 4 rows down on the left, under new and audio, video, and pictures. And then you're going to get this song. And hopefully you'll enjoy it. And that's my present to you. And we'll see you next week. Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming. Krishna Krishna. Radhe Radhe Shyam.